Hello and welcome to the Max Moo Podcast, a podcast about New York City theater and performing arts. This is our December preview issue. We link to all of the things we talk about at maxmoo.com. Enjoy the show.
So we're going to do like a hybrid podcast? Is that
the
deal?
Well, it's mostly the December preview.
Okay.
But as we all know, December is a wasteland of theater
nonsense. Right. Everyone kind of goes home.
Holiday kitsch.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're into like drag Christmas specials.
Absolutely.
In which case, you have many variety to pick from. I personally didn't prepare any comments on New York City's drag scene for this podcast.
No, neither did I. I left those notes in my other suitcase.
In your other pants?
In my other pants, exactly.
And then there are a couple of shows that I've seen recently that I want to talk about that I haven't had an opportunity to talk about.
Oh, okay, great. I'll riff on that. I've seen some stuff.
I assume you have seen
I've seen some stuff.
We can all pick like one or two at the most.
Yes. Question, though.
Yes, Jack's raising his hand.
And that is, there are some shows that we have gotten a lot of airtime on the podcast lately, and I can't recall if we've actually, anyone's ever actually talked about them, like You Got Older, and like certain shows that have closed. I don't know, should I talk about those?
What the hell is You Got Older?
You don't know?
We talked about
Claire Barron.
It.
It's like one of the best plays I've seen
in
months.
No, sorry. I know, you're right,
Okay, but like it's not, it's closed now, so like, should I not talk about it?
Here's the thing.
Okay.
It's not super useful to our listeners, but if you think it's that important and good, then yes, we should talk about it because it might come back to New York.
It
might tour to other places where our listeners
totally.
Are. So if you think it's one of the best things you've seen all year, you should definitely mention it.
Cool. Okay.
I will.
Okay. Let's do introductions. Liz, who are you?
I'm Liz. I'm Fuck Yeah Great Plays.
Welcome. Jack.
So relaxed, your introduction. I'm Jack. I work at the Public Theater, but I am here in my personal capacity as always.
And I'm Lindsay. I run the podcast. Okay, so this is mostly our December preview.
Right.
But some things must be talked about because we haven't had other opportunities to talk about them.
Lots to do.
So, needs must talk.
Yes. So we're going to start with The River.
The River.
Have you seen it, Jack?
No, I have not. I don't have $100,000 million.
It's true. It does cost a pretty penny to get in the door.
Yeah.
Though, I will say I got $35 seats by going to the box office Monday morning, and they sell the front rows of the benches.
Oh, for real?
For the entire week.
Oh, that's
for
nice.
$35, and that's what I did.
And
I don't have that kind of money.
Well, what was that experience like, though? Is it, I mean, you get to see the Hugh Jackman for $35,
the Hugh
which
Jackman.
Is great.
I was in
and
the
new Jez Butterworth
row.
Play.
From
yeah.
the front row. Right
so,
there.
I think that the ticket sales to this show, while robust, have not been as extravagant as potentially anticipated or feared.
Okay.
Because I was there, so I was also had a front row seat, although I bought mine in advance and it cost $99.
Ooh.
So I think certain of the seats are sold in advance and then certain of them are sold on the day of, but there's also standing room seats.
And
oh,
the
okay.
standing room, I believe, are $25.
So yeah.
Nice.
So if you get a standing room seat, which is sold day of, and then there are empty seats in the crowd.
Right.
They will just sit you right down in a $300 seat, which is what I observed when I saw the entire standing room row be seated right before the play started.
Oh, fantastic. And, and before I ask y'all how it was, for those of us who might be limited to the benches then, are they comfortable? Is it like annoying?
I was fine in them.
Okay.
And I have a ton of back problems, so I'm always cautious about it. But the play is what, only
90, 80 minutes.
Yeah, 90,
oh, okay. Yeah, right.
Quick.
And the benches have a back.
They're cushioned.
Oh, then we're fine.
And you're just within leaning distance of.
I could have grabbed Hugh's shoes if I wanted to.
Maybe it was like the rustic context of the play that made me picture, like, you know, like recycled wood benches or something
you're
like
sitting
that.
On a hay bale.
Exactly.
In the
yeah.
Circle.
Not quite that authentic.
Let's go see a play. Yeah.
No. All right, Liz, tell us about it.
Okay. Sorry. So The River. There is a cabin out in the woods, and this man, Hugh Jackman, brings...
Lindsay just left the table. Right? That was so rude, Lindsay. And you're not even on mic to defend yourself.
Sorry. The dishwasher was making noise.
Oh, man. Okay, so I'll start that over.
Start again.
Woo! I'll start that over. So, The River. There is a cabin in the woods. And this man, Hugh Jackman, brings his woman to the cabin to teach her how to fish, kind of, you know, bring their relationship up to the next level, maybe, sort of. And it becomes this dialogue between the two of them, but also with the women of his past. Are they past lovers? Are these women the same woman? Is it a ghost? All sorts of questions about the nature of relationships. And to me, a lot about the steps that you go through every time you enter into a relationship with somebody, the benchmarks that you have to hit with someone. I love Jazz Butterworth, so I think I was going to like this play regardless, personally. Hugh Jackman's fine.
Oh.
I don't know what your opinion is on that, but it's not a role that's particularly... It's not a rooster from Jerusalem.
Right. It's not a crazy out there.
It's not a huge, crazy, emotional, physical character.
Uh-huh.
I think, not to knock the guy, but I feel like many people could have done this role. It didn't feel like anything special. It didn't feel like it needed him in it.
Right.
I thought the women were great. Cush Jumbo and Laura Donnelly were wonderful. I want to
love Cush Jumbo.
I want to hang out with Cush Jumbo. I want to go get brunch with Cush Jumbo.
Absolutely.
But I think the women are really the selling point in this show for me.
Okay. Lindsay?
Before I went to see it, I had my expectations tempered because I didn't read any reviews, but I got the general sense that the reviews were a little disappointed in the play and that I knew I should go in with not expecting Jerusalem Part 2, right? And I don't mean the sequel. I mean, like, to feel as passionately and as be as excited by a play from Jazz Butterworth as I was by that play. And I think going in pretty open-minded and with reasonable expectations, I was totally pleased with the show. I don't totally know what happened in it. I don't really understand, like Liz alluded to, these sort of conversations with past girlfriends. There's a spookiness to it and a element of creepy. Mm. Maybe there's something terrible going on in the background of this play, but you don't ever see that explicitly. Mm. And I think I left with a lot of questions about what exactly it is that I saw. But I'm not sure that anybody really has the answers to those questions. We are in the time of year, twice a year, the Broadway community comes together to raise money.
Yep.
And I have seen Hugh Jackman perform that speech a couple of times at this show and a Steady Rain.
Mm-hmm.
He raises an insane amount of money.
Yeah, of course he does.
The night that we were there,
amazing.
The woman behind me pledged $10,000.
Holy hell.
Off the bat.
Just like,
no
here,
kidding.
Put it on my card.
That's what
just
I want.
Just checked her purse, see what she had on her.
It was amazing.
And I want your short, and I want my picture taken with you, and I'm willing to take
spit. I want your what?
Shirt. He was auctioning off his shirt.
Auctioning off his shirt that he wore in the play?
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's what he did.
He did for Steady Rain, right?
Yeah, that's what he did. He and
there's a man who knows his audience.
Who's the guy in it with him in a Steady Rain?
James Bond. Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
Thank you.
James Bond.
They auctioned off their white tank tops, and I think raised similar amounts.
Yikes!
Yeah. Okay. Hey, you know what? $10,000 to Broadway Cares. Nothing to sneeze
at. Hey, nothing to sneeze at all. Can I ask a couple questions? Because I don't know very much about this play. Which is on purpose. I had heard it's like spooky mystery type of things. So I was like, okay, I don't want to like seek out too much information
and I don't
about
say
this.
Too much about
no,
it.
Exactly. And nor should you. But I guess, you know, Liz, your sort of riff on the play made it sound a little bit like it's this meditation on love. And then, but I'm also here, you know, there's very stages of relationships and things like that. And then I'm also hearing like that it's this kind of mystery, what really is going on here kind of story. Is one of those, am I off base in how I characterized your...
I think it's both of those things. I think it is a love story in a way. But there is this sort of underlying tension spookiness.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very quiet play. There are huge chunks where there is no dialogue. I think he does gut a fish during the course of the show. And there's a whole part where he fixes dinner, and it's pretty much silent by himself on stage.
Wow.
And it's a very small stage. I mean, physically, it's very small. It just seemed like such a internal play to me, especially I have to compare it to Jerusalem.
I know, it sounds like the total opposite of Jerusalem, which is also exciting to me.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And also, you know, I keep thinking about you touched on something about Hugh Jackman and him not necessarily being like the guy for the part, like, that anybody, or not anybody, but that you could see several different actors playing this. Why Hugh Jackman? And I wonder that a lot of times, especially on Broadway, when you have these like top flight A-list movie stars in plays, and people would say, oh, well, you know, they're just there to bring the crowds in. No one would produce this play on Broadway if it weren't for someone like Hugh Jackman. But also, it's like, I don't know. I always wonder if that's necessarily a fair thing to say. It's like, yeah, anybody could do it, but does that immediately preclude someone super famous? Because, I mean, Hugh Jackman, I think, his reputation for not being a slouch as an actor. So,
no, I think he's a fine actor. He's fine in the role, but it wasn't... It didn't seem like a stretch. It didn't seem like...
I see. Okay.
I don't want to say it didn't seem like work, because I'm sure that it was work. Mm-hmm. But it just felt very safe.
Okay.
A safe choice. A safe acting choice for him.
I could also see a version of this play where things are a little more outrageously performative. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it necessarily has to be so insular and quiet. And I'm not saying that's the wrong direction to take it in, but I think part of me wonders if we're supposed to leave with quite so many questions about the outcome and, what happens with each of the characters that we meet in the play.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe there's supposed to be a little more indication towards the creepiness instead of just walking away thinking like, oh, maybe they just all went their separate ways.
Yeah, that is true. There weren't really any loose ends that got tied up. They all sort of just hung.
And then he said something after the show was over and he was auctioning off his shirt. He said something that made me think, oh, I think this play is actually more scary than I took away from it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't remember what he said after the show. So.
He said when he was auctioning off his shirt, he was offering to meet people in the back room where there's a bed.
Yeah.
And he said, don't worry, there aren't seven heads under it.
Ah.
And you thought that was connected to something in the play?
Yeah, most definitely.
Oh,
yeah. I mean,
okay.
There's some hints and references to what's under the bed in the show. I don't want to say too much, but there's some references to like what's under the bed and what does that mean.
Okay.
In the show.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which,
okay.
I didn't think
on.
It was as sinister as that, but maybe it was.
I think it's supposed to be.
Well, I want to see
Hugh Jackman
it.
Kills people, guys. I don't know.
That's what
like
I think.
Like not in the show? Yeah.
No, like in life. That's
yeah, in life. He just does that.
$10,000.
It's always the ones you
can
least
kill
expect.
A man with Hugh Jackman.
Okay, I just want to quickly mention two plays. One I just saw this afternoon called Napierville from Slant Theater by Matt Smart, directed by Adam Knight, which has one of a Max Moo favorite actor in it, Matt Dellapina.
Ah.
This is a show about a mother and a son. The mother has recently been in an accident and gone blind. The son has returned home to his hometown, which is a middle-sized town in Illinois, and they go to a coffee shop, and there's a bunch of characters who are swirling around them, and then, for the most part, the play has this kind of just pure realistic interaction between characters, and then it takes this really weird curve at ball direction at the end where it becomes a little bit more metaphorical. Or it goes in a direction where you can't see that actually happening in the real world. It's very earnest and very optimistic and very sentimental and sweet. Maybe a little too much for my taste, but overall I thought it was really interesting and well acted and well written and
who wrote it?
Worth everyone's time. Matt Smart. And then the other show I want to mention is Asymmetric, which we had included in our preview from this month.
Right on.
By Mac Rogers, directed by Jordana Williams. This is the show about the play about spies.
Oh, yeah. The one that was more John Le Carre and less Ian Fleming. Got it.
It's at 59 E59, and I had a great time at this play. I love things that are spy-related.
Oh, this did not disappoint.
I love Mac Rogers. Yeah. He's fab.
I was in suspense throughout. Also, I was surprised by how humorous the play is. There are a lot of really funny moments. Those both close this week, both on December 6th, so there's still a chance to see them when you hear this, but you would have to act quickly.
Yeah.
And then, Jack, what did you want to talk about? One of these great things you saw?
Yeah, I had a pretty... since we last met our heroes, I've actually had a pretty good month of theater. I don't know if I... Am I limited to a certain... Can I just kind of rattle off?
Be quick about it, yeah.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of plays that are closed, so I won't talk too long about them, but I really should mention them. The top of the list was You Got Older by Claire Barron. This was the culmination of her Page 73 residency. And it played at the Here Arts Center, and it's honestly, guys, one of the best new plays I've seen all year. It was extraordinarily good. And I think Claire Barron, who, you know, she was a member of, she is still a member of the Youngblood group at EST, and, you know, has had some readings and stuff here and there, but was not, I don't think, really on anybody's radar, but she absolutely is now. I mean, this play, it's sort of, just to give a brief sketch of it, it's the story about a young woman who's dealing with some of her own sort of neuroses, and she goes to spend time with her father, played by the incomparable Reed Birney, as he's dying from throat cancer. And it's about her, it's about family, it's about death, it's about father-daughter relationships. It's about all these things that you've seen before, but her Claire's voice is so specific. She's so funny. She's so twisted. Moments of emotional heft really land in an authentic way and not in like a young writer constructed, like I'm trying to be crazy or trying to be deep and emotional kind of way. So impressed with it. I only bring it up just because I hope to God it comes back to New York in some capacity because more people should get a chance to see this. The second thing I'll mention is I saw the second of the three adaptations of The Tempest that the La Mama has been doing and that I've been dutifully giving my coverage on over the past couple months. So if you remember from previous episodes, the first one was a rather straightforward American rendition of Shakespeare's The Tempest by Karin Coonrod with music by Elizabeth Swaidos. Last week, I saw a South Korean company do an adaptation of The Tempest that was wild and weird, full of dance and color. It sort of felt like a South Korean Julie Taymor version of The Tempest. It was really fun. It really played up sort of the high, like almost burlesque comedy that's inherent in the play that I felt like even Karin Coonrod's version kind of tamped down a little bit in favor of the sort of the somber father-daughter relationship that's at the center of the play. I just thought, anyway, so it only played for three performances. I doubt y'all got to see it, but it was really great, and it makes me very excited for the third one. So this is leading up to the preview portion. That is Nella Tempesta, which is by an Italian company. And that's the one that is going to apparently tie all three of these together, sort of highlighting the environmentalist aspects inherent in Shakespeare's play and sort of underscoring those. The other last play I'll mention in the retrospective section, as well as I have the mic, is a play that is still playing in New York and that y'all should see. It's called Our Lady of Chubejo, which I believe we talked about in previous episodes, by Katori Hall, directed by Michael Greif at the Signature, which is based on a true story about in 1982 in the hills of Rwanda, a all-girls convent school where three young girls have visions of the Virgin Mary. Which ultimately, years later, were confirmed as miraculous revelations by the Vatican. And among many things that these girls saw when they spoke of the Virgin was, by all accounts, a predictor of the Rwandan genocide, which, of course, ravaged the country a decade later. It is... You know, it's a real... Katori Hall stuffs a lot of stuff into her plays. This play is... The best way I can describe it is a really great edge-of-your-seat religious thriller, is the best way I can describe it. There are some... No, Lindsay's making a skeptical face, which I guess I should be used to at this point, but hear me out! Because it is... the authenticity of the girls' images is never never called into question. It's not like, are these girls telling the truth or not? It's taken as fact from the word go, which I thought was a really interesting take on it.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the stagecraft, some of the stage magic that's done is some of the best I've seen in New York in a long time, and certainly some of the best I've seen at the Signature. And the plays are just a really dark and sort of it reminded me a little. It had that sort of exorcist quality of like the sort of the satanic power of that religiosity can inspire in people, as well as, of course, you know, the intention to do good. So I don't know. It made me think about a lot of things. It's maybe the most viscerally powerful dramatic representation of the Rwandan genocide that I've ever seen. So I think that it's and it's not all terribly sad. So it's also just a very entertaining play. So I would get the tickets to that while you still can.
It got very strong reviews.
Mm-hmm.
People seem to really be enjoying it.
Super good show.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about things we're looking forward to in December. Mostly non-holiday things, I believe, is what we selected.
Yeah.
Liz, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. Because I texted Lindsay and I said, there's nothing. What am I going to talk about? But then I got an email from my buddies at The Representatives. And they have a new show that's going to open December 10th called Dead Black Temp. And The Representatives, I have seen, well, I used to see every one of their shows. I haven't been able to recently, but I'm definitely going to this one. This is part of their series of apartment plays. And they email you and you pick a date and admission is one bottle of wine. And then they email you the location and you go. And you stay at someone's house, and you go to the show, and then you hang out and you have the wine that you've brought with you. And they are always really fun and interesting, and I love the feeling of just being tightly packed into someone's apartment, you know, 500 square feet, and there's a play going on, and it's great. I mean, I sat on top of someone's air conditioner for like 2 hours at the last one I went to, and Stan Richardson wrote this, and he's written a bunch of plays that I really enjoyed. So I don't know too much about it besides the blurb that I just got an email. A new play about old friendship, a young romance, a birthday, a disease, a sublet, and a screenplay. But knowing them and the work that they do, I'm sold and I'm going to go.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
It's super fun.
And the theater company is called The Representatives.
The Representatives. Mm-hmm.
If we Google that, will we be able to find them?
Yeah, you got to get on their email list, and that's how you can figure out how to get tickets.
And what's the name of the play again?
Dead Black Temp.
Fascinating.
It's a provocative-ass title.
I know.
I love it.
Cool. All right, Jack.
Sure. Okay, so I think if you look back on all the episodes of the Maximum Podcast that I've appeared on, it seems as though the only thing I see are Aya Daktar plays. And I think that is kind of, I'm fine with that. Because guess what? Aya Daktar has a new show in town while he's kicking ass with the Pulitzer Prize winning Disgrace, which is still playing on the Broadway. And you should all see if you must pick a Broadway play to see.
Yes.
While you're around for the holidays. But at the New York Theater Workshop, he's got a play called The Invisible Hand, which has been kicking around various developmental stages for a while. And this is a play that is a little bit smaller than the others that he's had on had around town recently. The story is about an American stockbroker who, for reasons that I couldn't quite figure out, but I'm looking forward to figuring out, is captured by terrorists in Pakistan and is held and quarantined and tortured. And the play is sort of about this stockbroker's sort of negotiating for his own life, trying to reason with the terrorists, trying to outthink the terrorists. And it sounds like it's also a play that's going to be, in a larger sense, a meditation on how individual things that we do in our own lives can affect the world at large, and that the consequences of those actions can reverberate through the world at large. And this is something that I actually, I really started to notice about Aya Daktar's work that I love, is his ability to create these really beautiful, specific three-dimensional characters whose relationships you are so invested in when you're in the theater, but they are part of a larger fabric of something, whether it be religion, whether it be race, whether it be self-identification or identity politics, or in this case, the politics of terrorism and war. And he does it so seamlessly. He makes it look so easy, but it's one of the hardest things to do, and it's one of the most admirable and, dare I say, American things about great American plays, is this ability to kind of reverberate through not only sort of what's happening in the world now and what's streaming across the headlines, but stuff that's been around for ages and that we're just seeing our own little sort of contemporary window on. So yeah, it goes without saying. Anything Ayatollah does, I'm excited for, but I'm particularly excited for this one. I also wanted to point out that one thing I was interested in was that this is actually going to be directed by someone who is not Kimberly Senior Ayatollah's frequent collaborator. Bringing it up now. So please stand by for the name of the director, which is Ken Rushmore. And Ken Rushmore was his most recently. The last thing I think I saw that he did was a play called, what was it called? Red Dog Howl, I think it was, at New York Theater Workshop, which is this really creepy, you know, two-hander play.
I remember that.
Yeah, yeah, it was really messed up, but really effective play that the Workshop did a couple seasons ago, I think. So, yeah, The Invisible Hand.
Yeah, I'm super excited for that.
Come on.
Sounds good.
You got to interview him, Lindsay.
I would love
to. You got to find a way. I would love to hear an interview with him.
I would love to. Yeah, he's a really interesting playwright. He's producing just great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I love Disgraced so much.
So this is in previews now, I think it opens probably in a week or so. Mm-hmm. But run through December.
All right, in the vein of heavy hitter playwrights, I want to talk about Pocatello by Samuel D. Hunter.
Our friend.
Yes, this is a new play of his opening at Playwrights Horizons, one of the theaters that he has produced many plays at, including the award-winning and much-celebrated The Whale. This play is set in Pocatello, Idaho.
No.
Like many of his plays, they're set in Idaho. It is at a mid-scale Italian chain restaurant, very similar to, but not... The Olive Garden.
No. I don't even know what that is.
Schmaltzmarten.
Schmaltzmarten. Can I just say to Sam, Pocatello is a great title, but the Schmaltzmarten.
Schmaltzmarten.
I think he got something there.
There's a lot
there.
Going for it.
Yeah.
I personally have been to Pocatello. Being from Utah, it is just around the corner. I have relatives from Pocatello.
Get out.
Yeah. And there's not a lot out there about the further content of the play, although I know that it follows the sort of heartbreaking tale of the manager of the Schmaltzmarten, Eddie, who is played by T.R. Knight of Grey's Anatomy alum fame. So, you know, what's to be said about Samuel D. Hunter, MacArthur genius.
Very recently, God bless him.
Recently named that and, you know, winner of Obies and all the local theater awards.
Yeah.
He creates just gut-wrenching, beautiful plays that make you want to hug the characters and your friends and family and maybe do a little self-harming afterwards. I mean, it's just a combination of pure gory pain and heartwarming human triumph always. So I'm really looking forward to this, going to see it next weekend. Cannot wait.
Yeah.
Expect to be awesome. In tears potentially throughout.
Always have to be with Sam, yeah.
Yeah. If you have not heard the Max Moo interview with him, we do talk about Pocatello in it. We did that interview a few months ago, but this was already on our radars, and we already knew that it was happening at Playwrights this season, so he did talk about it some.
Yeah. It's also good, as Lindsay alluded to a few seconds ago, it's also worth listening to again for the just adorable Utah-Idaho bonding that happens between Lindsay and Sam. It's really special. I loved it.
I think I missed that.
Oh, Jack. You're so sweet.
Stop it. Yeah.
All right, Liz.
All right. So I'm going to go with the Fleas Cutthroat Series Part 4, which is coming up. They're doing the Grand Guignol, I can never pronounce that word, series. And it's been going on for a couple of months. I have skipped parts 1 through 3 because as much as I love the idea of Grand Guignol theater, I have a huge blood phobia. So, and they're very gory and awful. And the flea is always gory. So I just know that going in. But I decided I couldn't handle parts 1 through 3. But part 4 is lust. So they're doing shorts, they're going to be gory and creepy, and I'm hoping with the lust element that it's going to be kind of film noir-y that I've, for some reason that's the idea I've stuck on in my head. And so they've chosen one play out of each section from 1 through 3, and then they'll choose another one out of the fourth, and then they'll revive all of those in 2015. So I have been looking forward to this because I love Grand Guignol, hate blood, figured this is the least bloody of the four.
Yeah, and the most sexy, hopefully.
Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's at the Flea, there's going to be blood, there's probably going to be nudity. Like, yeah. Someone's going to get their balls chopped off. That's just what I'm anticipating here.
You heard it here first.
I'm calling it.
And perhaps another reason to check this out is this is going to be one of the last shows we'll get to see in the cramped but adorable space that they have on White Street.
That's true.
Before they move into their big spanking new, multi-million dollar facility next year.
Yeah, come see the weird charm of the Little Flea down on White Street.
I hope that the new place, I've seen the designs and it looks very flashy and nice. I will miss the grungy, especially that, like, basement theater. Oh, it's the best.
Where you're sitting
love
in
it.
Just like three rows that are, I don't know, 40 feet.
Those
40
weird
people
stalls
wide.
Where you're about to watch a medieval joust, it feels like.
I love that, though.
I love it to death. I have a lot of good memories.
And I
that
love
theater.
Seeing the way that directors use that space because it is such a weirdly shaped and with the windows and the walls.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just odd. And I like to see how people use it.
Yeah, totally.
Cool. Jack.
Okay, I'm going to talk about a show that is coming to town this week, the first week of December, that was actually just recently announced at the Abrams Arts Center, and this is our old friends Alex Timbers and Michael Friedman, of course, the award-winning collaborative team that brought us Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson, Love's Labor's Lost in the Park, work at the Public Theater, we love Alex Timbers to death, Here Lies Love is still kicking ass until January, and around the globe. And they have a show with their theater company, which, and I always love that I can never pronounce the name of their theater company, but it's Les Frères Corbusier. And it's their theater company that they kind of do most of their stuff through. And the title of the show is Here's Hoover, the historic Herbert Hoover 2014 comeback special. And so, much like Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson, this is sort of, sort of a goofy, the signature Friedman Timbers sort of like, slightly bro-y but very intelligent sense of humor applied to a very serious and august subject. And in this case, it's Herbert Hoover, the much maligned 31st president of the United States, who, of course, is probably most famous for creating the economic circumstances that created and then worsened the Great Depression. And the format of this show is this comeback special. So it's a musical. It's sort of the framework is that Herbert Hoover has come back from the dead to have, in 2014, a big rompin' good time comeback special that I guess is sort of inspired by the hilarious and kind of sad 1968 Elvis Presley comeback special that he had in Vegas. These guys are a lot of fun. If you got to see Love's Labor's Lost at the Park with us last summer, and you are one of the millions of people that adore Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson, I mean, this is, you know, Michael Friedman and Alex Timbers have sort of gone on their own creative paths in recent years. Alex Timbers, of course, is directing all this great stuff all around the world and has been on Broadway. Michael Friedman is, you know, still doing his stuff for the civilians, but of course just wrapped up what I think is his best score ever in Fortress of Solitude at the Public Theater. It's great to just have these guys have a little reunion party. So in many ways, this is also the Alex Timbers and Michael Friedman comeback special, which I just made me so happy. And if you're a musical theater, a contemporary musical theater nerd, that, of course, means you love these two guys, and that, of course, means you should be happy that they're giving us this little holiday gift. So I guess it's only going to be running for about 3 weeks at Abrams. It's got a kind of like a Wednesday through Sunday kind of schedule. Tickets are cheap. I just bought mine on the way over here for $16.
Really?
Yeah.
Only $16?
Oh, yeah. They're doing fast and loose with this one. So, I'm excited about that. Herbert Hoover.
I'm really excited for this. I'm excited to see what these two do together. Now that they're a little more experienced.
Yeah, right.
I think that in some ways they have the risk of failure. I don't know, maybe it's greater, maybe it's lesser, I don't know. But I feel like they've just reached points in their careers where they can take risks because they know they're gonna be more plays to come in the future.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think this could be a really interesting collaboration.
And the narrative is also different too, because when Bloody Bloody came. It was this runaway hit at the Public, and then it was like, hey, these new kids are going to Broadway. It was like this crazy, wow, we made it, kids. And now that they're like very well respected, you know, director and composer, it's kind of nice to see them kind of like, it's like they're going back to high school kind of thing. You know, I love that. It's
super fun.
The tagline is, Hoover is tanned, rested, and ready to rock your balls off.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Not balls chopped off.
Oh.
That's a different
show.
To show. A lot of balls-themed shows coming to you this December. Yeah, I said that.
Okay, I want to mention Every Brilliant Thing, which is a play that was a huge hit at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this past year. It then had a very successful transfer to London and is now coming to the Barrow Street Theatre in New York, which is one of the few theaters in the city that have launched successful commercial off-Broadway productions. It had Tribes and Our Town, and then it was where the Michael Urie show that started at Rattlestick, the name of which is now escaping me, the one-man show with Michael Urie about Barbara Streisand.
Fire and Cellar?
Yeah.
Fire and Cellar, yes. So I don't know who the folks are that run this theater, but they seem to have an eye out for shows that they think they can create that you can have a very small show in a 200-seat theater and create a commercial success out of it, which I think is a really interesting model. And I think it's something that, while perhaps you would be cynical about any kind of efforts to make money off art, nevertheless, is a really interesting model that they are having some success with, going around the world, finding these really unique, small productions that they think will be wildly popular. Mm-hmm. And that is my understanding of what they think they have found here with this one-man show from Edinburgh. It is by Duncan MacMillan, and it is about a son trying to cheer up his mother who has recently tried to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And so the quote, the pull quote I saw from The Guardian or The Independent or something was like, the funniest show you'll ever see about depression. Mm-hmm. But also not treacly or whimsical, but actually quite touching and heartfelt, but not too earnest, which is sort of a hot button point for me. I don't like anything that's filled with too much whimsy. So this, apparently, I haven't seen it, but according to the reviews out of London and Edinburgh, manages to walk this very fine line and create a really humorous but heartfelt production. So that's starting up later this month.
I like shows that walk a line of, you know, being too whimsical and to right in the middle there. I think it's particularly hard for theater to pull off because, like, with film, you know, you can retake something until you get the tone just right, or you can fix it with music or editing kind of thing. With theater, when you hit that sweet spot between something, you know, when you're kind of pushing the envelope a little bit, or you're teetering on the side of you know, too overly overwrought or emotional, when you hit that spot, it feels like a small miracle whenever I see that. So that's really exciting to hear.
That's the magic of life.
Magic of the theater.
<That's right.
laughs> All right. Anyone else have anything they want? Do you have another one, Liz, or no?
No.
I have one.
Go for it, Jack.
And you guys can call shenanigans on this. I'm kind of I'm kind of trying something a little different here, but I believe in this, so I'm going to talk about it. So I do work at the Public Theater, and I don't normally talk about stuff at the Public. However, one of the things I do there is I help run the Emerging Writers Group, which I think we've talked about a little bit, but it's a 2-year program that we do with 10 emerging writers, and you know, give them support and industry connections and, you know, stipends and things like that so that they can sort of launch their careers. One of the members of the current class, the Emerging Writers Group, is a young writer named Ricardo Perez Gonzalez. And he has a show, speaking of the holidays, that is coming to the New Ohio this December. And this is your, I know we're not supposed to do holiday themed shows.
That's okay.
But this is one. Ricardo has a play being produced at the New Ohio December 4th through the end of December called In Fields Where They Lay, which is the story that a dramatization of the story that we all, I think most people know about, which is the Christmas Eve truce in World War I. On December 24th, 1914, both sides in the trench warfare stopped. And played a game of soccer in the middle of the night, taking a break from killing each other, which they have been doing for weeks. This, of course, is the 100th anniversary on this Christmas Eve. Will be the 100th anniversary of that. So Ricardo's play is going up. It's a really gorgeous play. And if you are looking for something that has a little bit of the sort of traditional holiday spirit in it, but is also a really good, well-constructed, emotionally fulfilling and uplifting piece of theater, In Fields Where They Lay at the New Ohio, I think is something you guys should definitely take a chance on. Mostly because I know Ricardo really well, and I know his writing really well, and I adore him as a writer. And I think that we're going to start hearing about him a lot more in the years to come, particularly when he sadly graduates from the program, the Emerging Writers Program. But this is like sort of a first shot to check him out. So if you want something holiday related, In Fields Where They Lay.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That is a great note to end on. Thank you.
Happy
both.
Holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays. What are we going to get each other for Christmas, you guys?
I don't really celebrate Christmas.
Okay. But
the Secret Santa's going to blow.
I know. All the listeners should send Lindsay Barron's gifts this holiday season straight to her apartment. Her address is...
Well, you can't find me. I'm at a secret undisclosed location, not even in my usual place.
I want David Levy to be my Secret Santa just because I'm really interested to see what he would get me.
Oh, God.
Your request can be fulfilled.
Sure, it could. Hi, David.
Oh, no.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Maximu podcast. You can follow us all on Twitter. Maximu is at MAXAMOO. Jack is at Jack in Brooklyn, JACKINBROOKLYN. Liz is at Miss Liz Richards, MISSLIZRICHARDS. And I'm at Lindsay Barons, LINDSAYBARENZ. We'll see you next week.